The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And what's going on, everybody? It's Sunday night, April 15th, so you know what that means. You gotta get your tax returns in. But before you do that, stay locked in here for hour two of Sports Talk 1240. I am your host, Andy Sukoff. We're gonna have a lot of fun today, but before we do, I gotta introduce somebody who's sitting here in studio with me for the first time, making his Sports Talk 1240 debut, and he's got a big smile on his face, so I know he's excited for this. Good friend of mine, John Sharfman. John, thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, Andy, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, I'm looking forward to seeing what you can do tonight. We'll call this a trial run for you.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good.
All right, we're gonna jump right in. Big things around here. It's April. It means baseball. We all love baseball, and there's two teams that have very different expectations here in the city, and they're both going the opposite direction right now where everybody thinks they expect. I think we start with the Mets. They've won 10 of 11. Included and won their first five series, which is the first time they've ever done that in their history. And this, you're talking 56 years since they won their first five straight, and they have another series against Washington coming up this week, where that could really show us what they are.
Yeah, of course. And Andy, what I have to say is that even though it's still early on in the season, I know a lot of people are still stressing about the Yankees and the Mets and, you know, as you said, going in different directions. I have to say, I think it starts with the Mets is that it starts with their starting pitching. I mean, we've always seen with ever since that, you know, when they traded for Syndergaard in the deal with R.A. Dickey and Travis d'Arnaud, and then when they, you know, DeGrom, I believe he started off as a shortstop. They drafted him out of Stetson. And then I know, you know, Steven Matz, local guy out here in Long Island, but, you know, the rundown with the Mets has always been is their starting pitching is going to take them as far as they're going to go. And the problem with them in the recent years is they've had injuries. They've had, you know, out of those core five, I think it's more, you know, the Syndergaard, DeGrom, if they can get Matt Harvey from even a few years ago, even if they can get a shell of him, you know, and then they have, you know, Jake, as I said, DeGrom, they got Steven Matz. So what I always say with the Mets is it starts with the pitching. And what I think that they've done for the first time in a while is that they've actually built a pretty good, you know, offense around them. They got Cespedes back. Bruce is a good veteran, you know, hitter to have in the middle of the lineup. And it's not just Cespedes. And they're getting contributions from other hitters in the lineup.
And watching today's game and watching Syndergaard pitch, this has been – today was about as dominant as I've ever seen him perform. He had a stretch in the second, third, and fourth inning where he struck out eight straight batters, which is only two off the major league record. And – watching him pitch, he's throwing 97-mile-an-hour two-seam fastballs that are moving halfway across the plate. I saw a video this afternoon from behind the plate, and you watch the ball. It moved all the way across. It's like, how do you expect to hit that when it's moving that quickly and that drastically?
Yeah, I mean, I say with Syndergaard is that the funny thing is, you know, about pitchers is you want to see guys who are consistent. But when you have a guy like Syndergaard who's throwing in the upper 90s, his slider's coming in at 92, 93. And with him, he went against a good lineup today. I mean, the Brewers, they've added Lorenzo Cain. I know that they have Yelich who's on the DL, but that's a good lineup he's going against. But it doesn't seem like there's any team that, you know, not saying that they, you know, teams haven't figured him out, but he's just so overpowering other than his presence. I mean, an upper 90s fastball, he's got a couple good complimentary pitches, and definitely with the Mets is he's their guy. He and DeGrom, I know DeGrom's more of, you know, the straight heat, so is Syndergaard, but he's got that wipeout slider. And, you know, basically answering your question on, you know, how that even works is he's just so dominant. And when you look at him, it seems like every start of his, he's going deep into games. We've seen so many guys over the years who are just flamethrowers. They come in, they get burned out, they're throwing 90 to 100 pitches by the fifth inning, but he's economical with his pitches. And, I mean, doesn't it seem like Syndergaard's going into the sixth, seventh, sometimes eighth inning in every start?
Absolutely, and that's when, especially in a game now where we see pitchers barely make it to the sixth, and then, you know, binder managers go right to their bullpen, and we see how that backfires at times. Look, here's looking at you, Gabe Kapler. Sorry, I had to throw that shot in there, but I still think the Phillies are going to be better than people.
Well, I hope the guys are just warmed up when someone goes to the pen.
Exactly. But you look at what Syndergaard does. He's like an old school pitcher in a modern game where he can actually give you length more often than not, and he's got one of the most unhittable pitches in baseball. When I was watching the video from behind the plate, I equated that pitch with four others as some of the most unhittable pitches I've ever seen being thrown. Syndergaard's two-seamer, Clayton Kershaw's curveball, Randy Johnson's slider, Pedro Martinez's changeup, and Mariano Rivera's cutter. I think Syndergaard is up there with those in terms of an unhittable pitch.
Yeah, and I agree, and I always say with pitchers is, I so wish, I don't know about you, but I wish it could have been around back in the days where pitchers would throw doubleheaders and no one cared about a pitch counter. You see often, and I mean, we're not even just talking Gabe Kapler, but we've seen so many times where a manager will go to the pen three different times in an inning, put in a lefty-lefty, then bring in the guy righty-righty. And I know, you know, with metrics and baseball's all about analytics these days, but your starting pitcher, you know, when you're starting your number one, your number two, and I know that the Mets aren't yet, but a team like the Dodgers who, or the Nationals are paying guys like Scherzer, Strasburg, Kershaw big money. You want to trust them late into the seventh inning, you know, other than bringing in maybe a guy that's not the starter. Or, I mean, the Dodgers going to, what, Pedro Baez in the seventh inning every time? I mean, you're paying Kershaw over $200 million. You're going to hope that he's going to get the guy out when they're second and third with two outs than, you know, their middle reliever, or Ross Stripling.
Like, well, at least you don't have to worry about Noah Syndergaard pointing to the sky like Hansel Robles.
Especially when it's a home run to center field.
Yeah, exactly. But to counter that point where you're saying you wish you could have been to watch guys throw doubleheaders, but you have to think how many of those guys would have benefited from modern techniques. Take a guy like Sandy Koufax, for example. Arthritis derailed his career. Who's to say that maybe he would have been able to get himself fixed up and been able to pitch another 5 or 6 years, and he would have easily gone down as the greatest left-handed pitcher to ever play the game of baseball?
Yeah, no, it's true. And just to go on that, I always say the biggest thing with, you know, with baseball, and I mean, there are a bunch of issues like there are in any sports. I don't know about you, but I so wish that they just got rid of the pitcher hitting. Call me crazy. I know it's tradition. It's been there, you know, from how long the National League has been around. But I feel like when you watch pitchers in the NL, I'm not saying that they have a significant advantage, because it seems like the American League, it is a little tougher to pitch and go from the NL to the AL, you know, based on obviously the opposite of vice versa. But don't you think instead of that ninth hitter, I know not everyone's Madison Bumgarner or even Syndergaard, who's hit pretty well.
Syndergaard hit a double over Lorenzo Cain's head today.
He did. But when, I mean, I watch a lot of games, and you get to, I just hate having to see that eighth hitter being intentionally walked, because you know a lot of the time it's a gimme out, and I just wish it was a universal DH.
I've been saying that for years. I want a universal DH. It's not going to happen. At least not anytime soon. Could it happen eventually? Yes, I do. I do think eventually we're going to get to that point where the NL will adopt a designated hitter. But I have no issue with a pitcher hitting if the pitcher can actually hit.
And how many of them can?
Not many. But yeah. That's the thing. Like, you take a guy like Shohei Ohtani, who comes here, wants to be a two-way player, and while people haven't figured him out yet, he's killing the ball.
Yeah, and I feel like the way that he's doing it is, we've seen a lot of times when players come over, especially from, you know, Japan and, you know, the KBO in Korea, and we see a lot of pitchers. I feel like the biggest difference with Ohtani, of course, is that he throws the same speed and he mixes his pitches just like, you know, everyone else. Where how many times have we seen a guy like, you know, Kayagawa? Exactly.
That man does not exist.
Kayagawa, Jaewon So, or, you know, one of these guys that comes over and, I just think, of course, Major League Baseball, it's not even doubted that we are, you know, the most talented league, but you get a lot of guys that come over, they're not throwing as hard, they're not big enough, and I think the biggest difference also is when you compare it. So I always say this when I talk to people, is that I feel like a lot of times you see, you know, a lot of the Cuban players are unbelievable hitters, like Cespedes, and, you know, a lot of guys that, not like Rosny Castillo, but we have a lot of guys who have come over, they're big, they're strong, and someone that can hit the ball 400 feet and can, you know, handle breaking pitches, that's going to travel with you everywhere. But if you're, you know, a lot of times if you're a smaller guy throwing low to mid-90s, you don't have that secondary pitch where you're getting guys out in other leagues, Major League Baseball is a whole different ball game. Even after the steroid era, of course, which was, what, about 15 years ago, it seemed like everyone was cranking them out of the park. But, you know, especially coming over to this league, you have to be so advanced. And Ohtani, he's throwing over 90s. He's got a great splitter, and I mean, teams are going to have to figure him out, and they will. He's not going to keep up this pace, you and I both know, but he's been incredibly impressive so far.
When you saw him play in spring training and you watched him struggle, Did you think that was going to be... At least for me, I thought he wasn't going to be that bad, but I didn't think he was going to be what he has been thus far. I thought it was going to be somewhere in the middle, and I still think that's where he's going to wind up somewhere, like somewhere in the middle.
I was never worried as much because I take spring training with a grain of salt, and what I mean by that is let's look at Yankee fans like yourself. Everyone's freaking out about Stanton.
That's because Yankee fans are irrational.
I understand.
Yankee fans are insane.
I understand. I'm one of the three Miami Marlins fans, and I'm saying this on record. You know me forever.
Let the record show that John Sharpman admits he's a Marlins fan.
Yeah, I will be a Marlins fan until the end of time, and I have seen Stanton since he was Mike Stanton. He was drafted in 2009 in the second round. He wasn't even the Marlins' first pick in 09. They took Matt Dominguez, ninth overall, you know, out of high school. He was a third baseman. They took Mike Stanton. They pried him away from. I believe he was going to go to USC and be a tight end. Surprising, right? And you know they brought him up in the system. He impressed. And I could be wrong, but I believe that he made his same debut on the day that Bryce Harper actually Steven Strasburg debuted for the Nationals. Remember that Pirates game? I believe it was a June 2nd around then. Delwin Young took him deep, but. I know I'm going off topic, but I've seen Stanton struggle and go through spurts many different times. He's had weeks where he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, and then he's had weeks where he hits five home runs. So you got to let it play out. You're paying this guy a little under $30 million. You took on the contract. I wish we could have gotten something more in return. I love Starlin Castro. I think Jorge Guzman could be good. He's a flamethrower. But
I was singing his praises to you when they made the trade.
Yeah. No, it's the amount of money that you guys are paying him because you can, and we all know that baseball is not a fair game in terms of, economical figures, but you got to let it play out. Yankee fans who are freaking out, and he hasn't been this bad, but he's always been a streaky hitter. So I don't think Giancarlo Stanton's ever hit above maybe 285.
But the problem is with that, you have four other streaky hitters in that lineup, including reigning Rookie of the Year Aaron Judge. You have Gary Sanchez, who's an all-or-nothing guy. And whenever he's healthy, Nick Johnson 2.0, also a very streaky hitter.
Of course. And the way you got to look at it also is...
I keep saying, thank God Didi Gregorius is hitting fourth and actually just destroying the ball because he's doing everything the Yankees are asking him.
I think that trade that they made when they got Gregorius from... they got him from Arizona. I think it was a three-way deal.
Was
Shane Green involved in that deal?
Yes, and so was another young pitcher by the name of Robbie Ray.
Robbie Ray, and he was an All-Star last year. I actually was at the All-Star game with Scott, hoping to have him in here.
Yeah, well, I was gonna bring that on later, but we'll spoil alert now. We will have Scott Ambiner calling in on the second half of the show, and we'll be talking some NFL draft, some playoffs with him. So
yeah, no, and I'm really looking forward to it. Scott's incredibly knowledgeable, a good friend of mine, just like he is you. And just saying in terms of Stanton, Giancarlo Stanton is coming from old Sun Life Stadium, where it was about three vendors and a couple of 90-year-olds watching the games and. Blistering heat. I remember watching, there was a September game, and I believe it was about 2007 against the Atlanta Braves, and the announced attendance was about 575 people.
Speaking of that, I saw Darren Revelle posted this, that the Marlins Double-A team actually outdrew the Marlins the other night.
Well, the Marlins Double-A team, they've had the worst farm system for years, and the only way...
Even though they have a bad farm system... That's unacceptable that your minor league team is outdrawing the major league team. I don't care what the situation is. Your minor league team should not be outdrawing you.
It's true. I agree. And it's going to start sounding like we're Dan Liebertard and Stu Gatz talking in Miami about the Marlins. So I think we're talking about the Marlins more than the team does in the locker room. But the only thing I'll say, and just to segue to something else after this, is with the Miami Marlins, their farm system was so poor. For years, they were relying on guys like Tyler Cole, the second overall pick, and I think he's playing about as much as you and I are in minor league baseball these days. And, they restocked the farm system. I love the trade they made with the Brewers. They got Monty Harrison. Brinson struggled, but I do trust him. I like getting Sandy Alcantara and Sierra in the Cardinals deal. So I like that they do have a farm system. They have a couple of good young players, and you got to trust it. They brought in Jeter. Trust the process.
On an unrelated note, you and I had the same batting average as Jose Reyes. Through the first 15 games of the season, so there's always that.
I think everyone's known he's been washed for the last few years, and that trade that we made when we sent him to Toronto, I think we traded Josh Johnson, Burley, all those guys, and somehow didn't get Syndergaard in that trade. They chose Justin Nicolino. That's another issue. But, I think that you have to trust the process. Derek Jeter, I trust him. I really do. I have to see how this all works out. And when everyone was texting me when they were trading Stanton and Yelich and D. Gordon, I was thinking, who's next? Like, Reynel Pinto? But it's just, I mean, they've done this so many times, and you and I both know as a sports fan, everyone listening, you're not going to ever give up your team for anything. I mean, we weren't here, I mean, when the Dodgers left, or, you know, when the Cleveland Browns, they probably should have still stayed gone, but, you know, they left, and you stay loyal to your team no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with that. But now, moving on to the irrationality of certain fans here in New York, the Yankees, they're sitting at 7-7. I think everybody was expecting them, or wanting them, to be 10-4 at this point. They wanted them to sweep the Boston Red Sox and be cruising going into the series against Detroit. And we're seeing something a little bit different. The bullpen, which has been which was the strength last year, has been not exactly what everybody cracked it out to be. And it's still early, so I'm not too worried about it. But to watch Tommy Kahnle completely melt down, where he's walked as many people this year as he did in the last half of the season with the Yankees last season, he's walked as many people in 12 games.
I feel like it is, I've always said this about bullpen guys, it is so tough to get guys who are consistently good every year. Not naming closers, how many guys can you name in the bullpen that are good every year? I mean, I know Scott Shields had a great run with the Angels. He was dominant as their setup man. But I feel like with relief pitchers, it's kind of like field goal kickers in football. You know, you have a guy like Mike Vanderjagt who hits everything, and he comes the next year, he can't even hit an extra point. But
then there's Vinatieri who does it who's going to do it until he's 130.
Exactly. I feel like there's going to be, you know, rare cases of people who just get it done every year. But I feel like as a relief pitcher, you and I both know, a lot of baseball, I mean, as much talent as, some of it's luck, some of it's, you know, having your fielders in the right place at the right time, or, you know, a lot of other different variables, but I feel like a pitcher who comes in, is traditionally throwing one inning a game, players catch up, and sometimes you catch breaks, but I wouldn't be too worried. I'm always worried if a relief pitcher has just completely lost the strike zone, or his velocity is way down, like Dellin Betances.
I was just gonna say you were gonna go there because
we saw him in the playoffs. He just looked like a shell of what he was in the middle of the season.
I was at that game against Cleveland where the Indians couldn't field the ball to save their lives, and the Yankees are up big. They bring in Betances, and Betances can't throw a strike.
Yeah.
We're all looking like, what is happening here? Like, who is this guy that's on the mound? Because it's certainly not Dellin Betances.
Of course, and everyone knows this. As much talent as you have, as hard as you throw, we looked at, remember Amborix Burgos? He's throwing about 103, and it was going over his head. It was going over the hitter's head every time. You have to be able to control, have secondary pitches, and a lot of times relievers can get away with just throwing gas and like a mediocre changeup because you're pitching one inning. A lot of times you're facing three, four, sometimes five hitters in an inning, but to be consistent as a relief pitcher, one, you got to make sure that the guy is keeping his velo if he's a high-velocity pitcher. A lot of times they lose command of the zone, or if it's someone who is right around the plate and teams are just figuring them out, these are Major League Baseball players. They're being paid millions of dollars to hit the ball. There's so many analytics. There's so much video being watched. And I feel like how many secrets? Otani's the biggest secret. But in 2 months, you think he's going to be a secret after half the league's seen him?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But now I will ask you this before we change course. The Yankees bring in Aaron Boone this year, has never coached at any level before. Is he coaching to what you expected him to do, or is he exceeding or not meeting your expectations?
Well, I feel like it's still, as I keep saying, it's still so early on. Baseball fans were, of course, just excited to, you know, have the season back in swing, but especially a market like New York, and I'm not even a fan of course, the team here, but I know in the New York market, the Yankees and the Mets, I'm holding back laughter, are actually expected to win every single year. You know, these are teams that are spending a lot of money. They're in a big city. They have a lot of fans. A lot of people are passionate about the team. And the biggest problem is that fans are just overreacting. I mean, the Yankees are 7-7. They're going to play the Marlins this week. I would hope to split, but expect that you guys are probably going to sweep it with some ease. And baseball is one of those sports where, you know, this isn't football. If you're 7-7, I mean, you got to win out. The Yankees don't have to win out to make the playoffs. The baseball is such a marathon, and they're not even at the end of the first inning if this is a 9-inning, you know, makeup game. There's still so much time. And I mean, you tell me, has Aaron Boone done anything that, you know, should make Brett Boone the manager?
Well, basically, I wanted them to keep Girardi. I thought Girardi was the right person for this job, and Aaron Boone is just, at least from what I'm seeing, is just taking orders from the front office, which is basically what most managers are right now. But at the same time, you want somebody who has a feel for the game, and I think that's something he's learning as he's going. And I think that takes time, just like anything else.
I feel like, and I agree with that, but I feel like you want a manager who's, you know, going to speak his mind, knows the game. You think Mike Socha is listening to Billy Epler?
No, he's not, because he's still one of those old school guys. And any manager who's coming in now, any of the younger guys, they're taking directives. Especially a guy like Boone, who hasn't coached anywhere, he's taking directives from other people.
As respected as Brian Cashman is, and you know he's done an unbelievable job with the Yankees, you would know how far do they go in professional baseball.
And he's worked his way up the Yankee. I mean, he started as a ticket guy.
Right, of course. I mean, but I always say in terms of like baseball analytics and guy that has, as you said, a feel for the game. I mean, Aaron Boone, we both know, besides his huge home run against Wakefield to send him to the World Series, which you guys lost to the Marlins. But like,
you had to go there, didn't you?
That's gonna be my only highlight of, you know, the show with my team. But
well, no, that's not true. I'm gonna send you the link to it so that way you can keep listening to it.
But no, I honestly think Yankee fans really are overreacting. Rome wasn't built in one day. You know, you guys have a really good lineup. You got a bunch of power bats, and let it play out. I think it's gonna work out for you guys.
All right, we're gonna switch gears here before we go to break in a few minutes. A couple weeks, the NFL draft, and for me, that's when I feel like football is getting back into swing, is when the NFL draft comes around, because you know everybody talks about football doesn't end. You know, as soon as the Super Bowl ends, you go right into everybody's getting cut, everybody's getting fired. But for me, it's when the NFL draft, that's when I feel like the new season gets underway. Cleveland Browns have the number one pick. Who do you think they take number one?
The Cleveland Browns, for however many years, have bypassed quarterbacks. For some reason, they don't think the position's important for some reason. They could have had Carson Wentz. I mean, I know a lot of people did not predict that. He was a small school guy. Cleveland has to go Sam Darnold. I mean, tell me not. Call me crazy. I know Jet fans will ridicule me for this. I am not a Baker Mayfield fan.
I won't ridicule him. I don't want Baker Mayfield.
I just think he's a better Johnny Manziel, and I know he's gotten 100 comparisons. You know, with that, Cleveland has to go Sam Darnold. Is there even another option? Or are you going to defend the number one pick on Saquon Barkley?
Who's
a clear home run
hitter? I just said Allen.
Yeah. Why do you think Allen?
I think Allen's got the highest ceiling of the three quarterbacks. Aside from the fact that he's humongous, he's got a huge arm.
Sam Darnold's a big guy.
Yeah, but Allen is like one of those, like, you know, down-home, corn-fed Midwest guys who just...
I think he's from California, actually, but rural California.
Yeah, exactly my point. So, like, he's, like, one of those guys who's, like, grows, like, small town and just does his thing.
And who's the last good Wyoming athlete? Theo Ratliff in the NBA?
Exactly. So that means they're due.
Yeah, exactly.
They are due for one.
They could go a different ways. I think they have to address the quarterback position. I think the bigger question is what the Giants do at two. The Giants, you know, they have Eli, who they have trust in. You know, they're building, you know, they have Dave Gettleman who's come in. They could go a multitude of different ways. They could take Josh Rosen. They could take Barkley. They could take Bradley Chubb. Or, which I think would be the smart thing, you trade back to, like, you know, even the Bills pick. The Bills are 12. They've made it so obvious that they're dying for a quarterback. A.J. McCarron's not starting week one unless it's for Alabama. So, you know, they've made it pretty obvious. They want to trade up. They have a bunch of teams in front of them who need quarterbacks, and if you're waiting around at 12, even my Miami Dolphins could pick someone. I mean, I hope they, you know, wouldn't just reach for someone at 11, but I think the Giants honestly have to trade this pick. And the amount that they will get back from Buffalo, a team like Buffalo, I'm just spitballing here, going up from 12 to 2, how much do you think they could get? They could get a first. They could get a bunch of seconds.
I think they could get two firsts.
Yeah, Buffalo's going to be desperate. They definitely will. So I, what do you think?
I think if the Giants aren't going to take, if they're not sold on taking any of the quarterbacks, they should trade down.
And don't make it obvious that, you know, you just want to trade the pick. I feel like if they make it out, like, all right, there's a guy that they've fallen in love with. We see so many teams openly, like, you know, they're going to express their love for a certain player. Sometimes they use it as bait to have someone come up and be aggressive. But the Giants can play it to their advantage because they hold the pick.
Yeah, this is all setting up for the Cleveland Browns to get their quarterback and then get Saquon Barkley at four. Because, you know, if the Giants trade down, whoever's trading up to two...
I think they will get Saquon Barkley at four.
Quarterback, and, you know, the Jets are going to take the other quarterback that's left.
Oh, my God. If the Jets don't take a quarterback and trade up, I don't know what you guys are going to do. They're already on thin ice. I mean, they're kind of, I feel like the Jets are doing a similar, you know, route to when the Eagles a couple years ago, I believe they signed Chase Daniel to like a backup deal. Then they traded up for Wentz. They had Sam Bradford. So you have Teddy Bridgewater, you have Josh McCown. And, I mean, they'll have three, hopefully, the third pick. They'll have, you know, their first-round quarterback. And I feel like they could have a nice quarterback room.
I hope they do. I had Lee Steinberg on the show months ago, and he was talking about the quarterbacks that he's had, and a lot of them are franchise guys. And I said to him, this makes me remember that I'm a Jets fan, and I don't know what a franchise quarterback is.
Right, I mean, how many franchise quarterbacks have you had since Joe Namath?
One.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll take that back. One and a half. Ken O'Brien and Chad Pennington.
Yeah, exactly. So, but in the NFL, we all know this. You need a quarterback to win. The Bears got to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman, but that defense was... I don't think the Jets have Urlacher and Lance Briggs over there.
No. They had Jamal Adams and Leonard Williams.
But you traded up. You traded up a lot. Go get your guy. Go develop him. Even if you have to make him sit. And
That's what I want them to do. Let him sit under McCown or Bridgewater. I don't really care.
You guys competed last year. I say this all the time. I hate the Jets. I'm a Dolphins fan, but they were way... I knew, bet on anything, that they were not going to be 0-16. I knew that, you know, they still had some players. I think Robbie Anderson, if he can kind of behave himself a little bit, they got a couple good receivers. I think they made a great trade, the Sheldon Richardson trade, by getting Kirst, and what did they get, a second?
Which they then traded to Indianapolis.
That's a nice deal, though.
I agree with that. I'm not saying no to
that. The Miami Dolphins traded Jarvis Landry, and they got a fourth and a seventh. How often does the seventh even make the roster? Or the special teamer?
Usually not. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Scott Ambiner joining us. We're going to talk NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, and the great debate. Which one is better? You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And we're back for the second half of Hour 2. Sports Talk 1240. I am Andy Sufo alongside John Sharfman and my man Brian back there behind the glass making it all happen. Brian, how you doing tonight? You got two thumbs up from Brian? That's what I like to hear. Well, you know what? You know what's another great part about April? It's the playoffs for the winter sports. The ones that some people care about, others don't. And with that, we're gonna make our crew complete right now. We're gonna introduce Scott Ambiner. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. The transportation didn't line up all the way, but here I am from my apartment.
Yeah, I blame the Long Island Railroad when all fails. All right, so we're gonna jump right into it. The NBA playoffs started this week. I think a lot of people are kind of getting sick of the Cleveland Golden State finals every year, and they want to see something different. And there's a good chance that we might. And Cleveland didn't get off to the best start tonight. losing to Indiana 98-80, even though LeBron had a triple-double.
They sure did not. And I just want to say that it was very refreshing to see that LeBron James' Cavs record fall from, like, 20-0 his last first-round appearances to 20-1. And this is a very scary Pacers team that he's playing. And it's a different kind of season, I think, both in the East and in the Western Conference. I still think the Cavs are going to take the series. The Pacers are going to give them a run for their money. But that's what I like about this year's playoffs, that even though at the beginning of this season, it sure looked like it was a two-team race like the last couple years, it doesn't look like that going into the last 2 months.
Yeah, John, and you remember when they said after the Pacers traded Paul George they were going to be nothing.
I was just about to say that. The funny thing that you mentioned that is that look at that trade that they made. They get Oladipo, who you know was with the Magic, played well in college, and they got Sabonis, who was a first round pick. And everyone was like, "Oh, this is just a throwaway Paul George for 1 year." But you know, parlaying off what Scott said, I do agree. I still think Cleveland's going to advance. They got LeBron James, but it proved tonight that, I mean, LeBron James, he put up a triple-double. He is 24, 12, and 10, and they still didn't win. And, I mean, the roster they had, they got rid of Wade. They made a lot of changes, but, you know, they brought in some youth. They got Rodney Hood. I mean, George Hill's an established veteran. But it just seems that LeBron James has been lacking those horses, and there's only so much that he can do.
And looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference, you got some fresh new faces in the Eastern Conference players, including the Philadelphia 76ers. Trust in the process finally pays off. Joel Embiid is healthy. Ben Simmons is healthy. Markel Fultz.
Joel Embiid kind of healthy.
Well, I meant for the majority of the season. I mean, right. they did win 52 games.
Right.
And they go in, and they're playing Miami. They were down big, and I know this is eating at you a little bit. I can see it. I can see it in your face. Scott, you should see the face he's making right now. I think he's about to jump over the table at me. And the 76ers come back and win an absolutely wild game. What did you see from that 76er team last night?
Well, I saw J.J. Redick prove why he's stayed in the NBA so long. I saw Ben Simmons prove that what he did over this regular season isn't going to stop anytime soon. And the debate, whether it's him or Donovan Mitchell, who's the best rookie in the NBA, is so stupid. Because it sure doesn't matter who's better at this time of year. It matters what they could do with the rest of the guys. And I saw a series that could potentially go a long way if the Heat can at least manage to win a few games at home, because it doesn't look like much is happening in the city of brotherly love.
Hey, yeah, John, you're going to be our Miami Heat insider. What do the Heat have to do to beat the 76ers?
Yeah, I mean, just to go off what you said before, and I want to get to the Heat in a second, is we mentioned Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons, and I'm not just saying this because the Heat got smoked. I said for the last couple of days, I think Donovan Mitchell should be the Rookie of the Year for, a couple of reasons. And, I mean, not only the reason that Ben Simmons, I know they say he wasn't actually a rookie, but let's look at who Ben Simmons has around him. He's got Joel Embiid. He's got J.J. Redick. He has, Robert Covington's been good for them. Donovan Mitchell has Rudy Gobert, who missed 30 games. Joe Ingles, who has, about as much of a hairline as Burr. And if you think about it, Donovan Mitchell has way less to work with than Ben Simmons. And based on what you were saying.
But could you make the case that Ben Simmons is making all the other players around him better, that having him out on the court.
That's a good point.
Where last year it was just Embiid for a little part of the season, and then with Covington and Redick and all them, and they were terrible. Now they get Ben Simmons back, and now they're a 50-win team.
No, nobody even talks about Dario Saric. Dario Saric, I mean, as ugly looking as he is, I mean, he's great for them. He's a big guy. He's long, and he's a big part of the reason why they've been so good. And if you look at it, and based on with the Heat, here's my biggest qualm I've had with this team: the NBA is built. Tell me if I'm wrong, Scott or Andy. It is a veteran league that's built on superstars, and the Miami Heat have built their team. They lost a lot of guys. I mean, they lost LeBron when he left, and Chris Bosh, obviously, his whole situation. But the Miami Heat have been picking up the pieces. And it's not even close. They have the best owner-GM combo in South Florida. It's not saying much. But when you look at their team, they're a veteran team, which is good, but they lack that superstar. Dragic is a good point guard. It's nice to have Wade back. But in the NBA, you're always going to win more when you have the more established veteran superstar, and they just don't have it.
I think Whiteside can get to that point, but I don't think he's there yet.
And he also, they don't play him in the fourth quarter. And I usually don't question Spoelstra because he's been, you know, a staple of that team and he's brought them all together. But I mean, it just seems like him and Whiteside are not on the same page. They love playing Kelly Olynyk, who's more of, you know, the, you know, like a perimeter big. He's not a guy that is going to stick his face in there, even though he's a tough guy. He's not Whiteside who's going to come in there and grab you 15 boards and do all the dirty work. And they like playing Bam Adebayo, who I think is going to be, you know, the success, Whiteside's successor. But they got to figure it out quick because they've played like this all year. You know, every, you know, a lot of the times this season, they'd win two, they'd lose three, they'd win three, they'd lose one. They're just all over the place, and it's a veteran-driven league. And, you know, when you have more talent, guys like Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, they're better than guys like James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and, you know, even a guy like Dragic, who's good for them.
And looking at the rest of the Eastern Conference, you have Toronto, who's, and they're right now, a lot of people think Toronto is the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. When they with the star power that they have with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, that, I mean, that's a team that is pretty difficult to beat.
Yeah, of course. And you know, Scott, I would love to hear your opinion on this, but you know, I think with Toronto is that it's almost like they finally arrived, but we all know they're still going to play LeBron James. They're still going to have to beat him. And when is the last time that LeBron wasn't in the finals?
It's been probably 7 years. Is it 7 years at this point?
He's been to seven straight finals.
What was the last time? The Lakers and the Celtics when they squared off, or was there a time after that?
Let's see. He was in the finals every year with
Miami. He played Dallas. They lost. And
so
won.
That was the 2010-11 season. So the last time would be 09-10. Which was
Lakers and Celtics.
Lakers-Celtics. The second one. Or what I think was like the 12th. Or that's at least what it feels like. But you look at, speaking of the Celtics, they had a wild finish today. I don't know if you saw any of it, but they still managed.
Chris Middleton hit that half-court shot that, you know, sunk in, and it's just, I think the Celtics are, I think they're going to win this series based on that Brad Stevens is, you know, Brad Stevens not on the court, but, you know, he's a really good coach. He's bringing them all together. I would just imagine what this team could do if they had Hayward and Irving on the court.
I was just going to say that. I mean, Scott, they're doing this without Irving. They're doing this without Gordon Hayward. And
imagine Cleveland without LeBron and Love. Where are they going to be?
They're probably getting DeAndre Ayton first pick.
Yeah.
I think that if there's any team that could take advantage of that, it's probably the Bucks and a guy like Giannis. But the Celtics definitely have the coaching advantage, and I think Brad Stevens is probably the brightest young coach that we've seen come up since maybe Frank Vogel, who is another coach who's probably weeping watching his Pacers do stuff that he groomed them to do. But the Celtics definitely would be a higher seed. Does it matter against a team like the Bucks? I think that the Bucks match up very well, especially in the absence of a guy like Hayward. And, of course, with Irving being out. But it'll be an interesting series. And I think if the Celtics can escape Milwaukee in this round, then it sets up pretty favorably for them. Because I think the Raptors and Wizards, they've seen each other a few times in the last few years. They're going to beat each other up no matter what happens. And, I mean, that's half the powers in the East, at least this year.
Now we're going to go to the West, where I think we all know where it's setting up, that it's going to be Curry, Durant, and crew against Harden.
Yeah, I mean,
probably.
I've wanted to talk about this for so long because I've said since December that I think this is Houston's year. Not just saying because Curry went down, but can the three of us finally, you know, give Anthony Davis a little bit of credit for getting his first playoff win? He's doing it without Boogie, which I've said this so many times. I would have loved to see DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis as two throwback big fours and fives against Golden State. And just hear me out, because I'm not saying that I think they would beat Curry, Durant, Thompson, and Draymond, but I would have loved to see kind of like an older school NBA, even though they shoot threes, they play on the outside. But New Orleans, Anthony Davis he's been so talented for so long. He's like a Karl-Anthony Towns who's just coming up.
It's the power of the brow.
Yeah, exactly. And he's so dominant. He's so good. And finally, I mean, they still have so much work to do, but he's doing it with, I mean, Nikola Mirotic has been really good for them. Ian Clark had a big three. Drew Holiday has been good. They're paying Drew Holiday a boatload of cash to be on that team. And, you know, they went into Portland into a tough environment. Portland's been there before. Portland's hosted them, and they got a big win. And, like, are any of us not rooting for New Orleans to go far?
It's a much different team than Curry faced in Curry's first appearance with the Warriors in the playoffs. I remember when he hit that big three to sink the Pelicans in New Orleans. And this Pelicans team is way different than they were 3-4 years ago. Of course, Davis is older. They had Boogie for most of this year. The new coach, I'm sure Alvin Gentry wants to win as badly as anyone else does. And we'll see what they could do. It's an interesting matchup, though. The Blazers are very deserving themselves. They had been in the playoffs a lot of times, too, in the past decade. They've had some very unfavorable matchups, too. The Blazers have been matched up against the Rockets in a few tough years in the first round. So that'll be pretty feisty, too. I think that could go 5 or 6 games for sure.
And talking about the Pelicans and how they play an old-school game, it got me thinking of what a matchup with these Pelicans against Pat Riley's 90s Knicks, where you would have Boogie going up against Ewing, Davis going up against Charles Oakley.
Wow, okay.
Could those guys go outside and, you know, defend a 20-foot jump shot, though?
Oakley, I think, could. Ewing, at that point,
I'm not saying Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins are as good as them, or they're clearly not as established, but I just love watching guys like Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, who I really kind of stuck, quite frankly, find is a little bit annoying on Twitter with all of his posting. But I really do, you know, appreciate a big that could go out, take shots, then dominate to the hole. And I don't know if either of you guys watched the Pelicans and Blazers, but Anthony Davis took over that game. That was great. That was just refreshing to watch.
I didn't see the game, but to answer the Knicks 90s question, I think the Pelicans definitely are the most similar team right now to a late 90s Knicks physical team, the late 90s Heat. They had so many great series against each other, and yeah, I would love to see Charles Oakley and Boogie take it outside one day, because that would be a hell of a matchup on or off the court.
I'm pretty sure they'd wind up killing each other.
I think so. It would be something like James Dolan up against Oakley, but a little more fair.
Team Oakley. But, sure. But unfortunately, we'll never, ever get to see that except on NBA 2K, which I actually did try the next one. Maybe I just got lucky because Davis couldn't hit a three to save his life, and I caught fire with Starks, but that's neither here nor there.
Let's parlay into one thing. Do we all agree that this San Antonio Spurs team I'm not saying his best job, but the fact that Greg Popovich has them in the playoffs, the team is... Well, Marcus Aldridge, who at this point of his career is a bona fide jump shooter. They have Kawhi Leonard, who I don't even know that situation. I'm just hoping that somehow he hits live and goes to Miami. I've been praying for that for the last year or so, or, you know, ever since this happened. But I watched that Warriors-Spurs team, and no disrespect to a lot of the guys that the Spurs have. They still have some veterans, but it just looked like they didn't even look like they belonged yesterday.
Scott, I'll let you take this one first.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Sorry, I don't know who's, you know, which turns we're taking here. But I think that the Spurs have a tendency to get down really early. And I think if the Warriors advance, then at least Kevin Durant's showing something. If they don't, a lot of people are going to attest it to Curry being out, which is a little generous to Steph Curry because of all the talent around him, even when he's not on the court. But the Spurs are such a different team without Kawhi Leonard out there, and his presence not being there makes a world of difference. And it's something that Greg Popovich might not even be able to overcome.
Not only that, but and I know it's been a couple of years now, but the Tim Duncan factor is still out there. I mean, when you have one of if not the greatest power forward to ever play the game out there, he brings a different element to the game where he could make that post up jumper and get inside, dominate. You don't have that now. And then without Kawhi Leonard, you're relying on Aldridge and Parker. And Parker isn't Tony Parker from 2003 anymore.
And they're relying on Manu, who's really just past his prime, of course. I mean, he had a good spurt last year. But As I've been saying the whole time with the NBA, is that I just feel like they don't have the horses anymore. They're going to have to hopefully lure another free agent.
I think this is going to be about the time that they have to start rebuilding. And we saw what happened when Popovich came in, David Robinson gets hurt, they tank, get the number one pick, boom, Duncan, five championships. Maybe it's that time they do it again. You know, because Kawhi Leonard goes, your superstar's gone. And then now you can put it in place where it's like, okay,
Aldridge's on the other side of his career.
It's like, and then you can take it. They have one bad season. Popovich resigns. You bring in the new coach. Get a top pick. New superstar. New era of dominance in San Antonio.
Right. I mean, that's really, you know, playing it down the line. But I think another thing is that, I mean, it doesn't matter that LaMarcus Aldridge is still a freak of nature himself. He was a great addition. But they don't, I mean, a guy like Duncan was the guy holding the glue together, and Kawhi Leonard kind of became that transfer of power in a way. And when Leonard started, I think some of the reason for their continued dominance at that point was because they still had that connection to those past mid-2000s teams. Without Leonard on the court, there's really none of that cohesion that Greg Popovich has enjoyed with all of these 21 consecutive playoff runs. They just go back to a normal team, you know. When they had Duncan, they had guys like Bonner and Michael Finley, and even Nick Van Exel, who made it look like it was a Wranglers and Stoys game on the court every night. It was incredible to watch. And without that, they just go back to another playoff team that has a shot at, you know, getting past the Warriors and Rockets and the big guns, but they're not one of them, at least on paper, man.
So, what series are you most intrigued by in this first round?
Right now, I would probably say it's the Timberwolves and the Rockets because they're just such different teams. You got the ambiguity of the Wolves on the court. Without Jimmy Butler, it's a complete 180. But, you know, with KAT, he's a guy that'll, you know, transform the team in a whole different way. And then you have on the other side, the Rockets, who under Mike D'Antoni never even thought the guy would come back to the NBA. I don't want to say revitalized because the Rockets have had good teams in the last decade.
And to be fair, once you get away from the Knicks, you immediately get revitalized.
Right. It's like the Mets curse after everybody, you know, just putting up their best numbers. But yeah, that's what it's
nobody. How come nobody talks about Andrew Wiggins? I mean, he's still
He's my age, I think, Andrew Wiggins, and he's one of the reasons too. But I like that series because it's kind of like a yin-yang, you know? It's completely different styles. The Rockets are going to be overwhelming favorites, but the Timberwolves could see putting up 20-point victories in their lone wins in a series like this. So I like it. It's a 1-8, right? It's a 1-8 matchup, but it's one of the more intriguing 8 teams I've seen. I kind of liken these Wolves to those 07 Warriors that upset the Mavs in the first round, who won like 67 games under Avery Johnson. Like, that team I kind of see in these Wolves. I don't think they're going to upset the Rockets, but if there's a team the Rockets lose to, it's Minnesota. So,
all right, we're gonna switch gears here. We're going to talk about the other playoffs. We're gonna talk a little puck here because I think it needs to be discussed because the NHL playoffs, fighting for the Stanley Cup, is arguably the greatest month and a half in sports because every game just gets even more intense. Overtimes are crazy, and I don't know if you guys saw the game on Friday night between the Vegas Golden Knights and the LA Kings going to double overtime, and Vegas gets the win. Eric Hall scores the winning goal. Vegas is up 2-0 on a recent two-time Stanley Cup champion.
I think that Vegas has to be, it's not even close, one of the best, if not the best story in all of sports is that they're has a hockey team in their first year ever done this well?
No,
not this. A team in all of sports has never done what the Vegas Knights have done in their first year. So no.
And they don't even have Fleury. He hasn't even. It's not like because Fleury is. I think
Fleury's been playing.
Fleury's been playing, but he hasn't. He didn't play every game this year. They had like Malcolm Subban.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't have a goalie play 82 games. That's insane. The closest we've ever seen is Martin Brodeur play 78, and people thought that was crazy.
Who's now with Vegas? Who would you guys say has been, you know, the bigger key to that team? Guys like James Neal, they got Marchessault.
William Karlsson's the guy. I mean, he's a 40, He comes over and he's
got like 43 points this year.
He'd been a bit player before he comes to Vegas, and all of a sudden in his age 25 season puts up a 43 goal season and 78 points. That's not bad for your first year in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, it must be nice to be in Vegas. That team's winning, and I've always said that, you know, because we've shied away from, of course, there's never been a professional sports team. The Raiders are going to come soon. But with the Vegas Golden Knights is, I feel like if the first year everyone's expecting them to lose, they've maintained focus. No one's getting distracted. There's a lot to do in that city. There's, you know, a lot to take your mind off of hockey. And that city has really embraced it. I saw ever since, you know, after everything happened with, you know, the shooting and, you know, as tragic that was, is that city has really, you know, come together and built around that team. And they're showing up the T-Mobile Arena, and they're having a good fan base. And, you know, props to them. I have to say, I didn't even think that they would even win a game against the Kings, because maybe I'm, you know, I underestimated them. And the Kings have Jonathan Quick, who's been there, you know, he's established goaltender. He's been there before. But, you know, Vegas looks really impressive. And I'm not saying that this is the year that they go all the way, because I know that they still have a couple of teams in front of them, and, you know, they still have a while to go. But it definitely is an exciting story. And I think it's good for the NHL, of course.
I agree. I mean, the Kings aren't the same team that beat the Devils soundly and then the Rangers 2 years later in the Cup final. They don't have the same coach, but they do have the same goalie. And on paper, they have about 1,000 games more experience at this time of year than the Knights do. I think the Knights' greatest strength is their depth. They don't lack talent, really, in any facet of the ice. And you're right, guys like James Neal, Derek Englund, who's been around the entire league, they've been instrumental. Cast-offs like Nate Schmidt on the Caps have been absolutely invaluable to what they've done. And you look at their coach, Gerard Gallant, he's a guy just like D'Antoni who got thrust out of his last situation unfairly in the middle of the year in Florida, one of your teams, John. And the guy's gotten another chance to reclimate himself, and he has. And, of course, the fans have been incredible. The place is packing out every night. I don't know if you guys saw, like, the pregame ceremony that they had with, like, the Knights jousting on center ice. That was amazing. I felt like I was at, like, medieval times watching that. But it's a great show. I hope they beat the Kings. I think they will with a 2-0 lead. I don't know who they'll be playing next. I don't think they're going to win the whole thing because teams like the Predators and the Jets just are better top to bottom.
Speaking of the Jets, they got smacked around in the first game in Minnesota. They lost 6-2, and they still got a 2-1 lead. And they, you know, it's always said, a series doesn't start until a home team loses.
I honestly think with this year, and again, I'm not, you know, the expert in hockey. I, you know my fair share, but I really do think it's the Lightning year, and I'm not just trying to, you know, jump on the bandwagon, but they've had Kucherov and, you know, Stamkos, and they've had a bunch of horses. Kucherov had a 100-point season, Stamkos 86, and I mean, they're rolling. I mean, I think Scott, you were excited to see the Devils in there and hope that Taylor Hall can make an impact, but do you think anyone, you know, on that side is going to beat the Lightning on their way to the Cup?
I think the Lightning have to be the prohibitive favorites, but I sure wouldn't be surprised if the Pens get in their way, if the Bruins do, as dominating as the Bruins have been against the
Toronto,
against the Leafs.
Yeah.
But I would like to see the Lightning get there. I thought the Lightning should have beaten the Blackhawks a few years ago in the Cup final. They had just as stealthy a team as they do now. They still have the same core guys, but I agree, the Lightning have to be the favorites right now in the East. I mean, they were as dominant as the Knights were in the West. The only reason nobody really saw them the same way was because this wasn't the Lightning first season in the league like the Knights.
Yeah,
so.
We got a couple more minutes before we're going to sign off for the night. I would like to see Tampa Bay finally get over the hump, but they're going to still have to beat Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's going for a three-peat, which hasn't been done in 35 years since the Islanders did it. Do you see it as a definite possibility that the Penguins could get back?
Yes, I do, and I think they probably will. If I had to pick, I would pick the Pens. I think they're going to beat the Flyers. I don't know who comes next.
It would be the winner of Washington and Columbus.
The winner of that, okay. Well, I mean, the Caps on paper are like the Cincinnati Bengals in the playoffs. You know, that's just how they are. They always fold. I'd love to see Ovi get there.
but I think the Pens just managed to stay healthy enough to get guys up from the minors just in time, like the Sheeries of the world. Matt Murray, with all the injuries this year, losing his dad, that was tough, but he's back in net for them, and I think they're rocking and rolling, but it wouldn't surprise me if they got back. Penn's Preds is very likely, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to close off on this, is that I think it's remarkable how impressive Sidney Crosby still is. And, you know, we are about to wrap up, and I agree. I'm hoping, you know, I like Tampa Bay, and I think that they have a good, you know, nice squad that, you know, Kucherov and Stamkos and even Victor Hedman is coming to his own a little bit this year. But, you know, I think that, you know, based on what you guys said, it is remarkable that Crosby and Malkin are still going strong.
Yeah, Scott, I just want to I want to thank you for taking the time out tonight for joining us. Yeah, that's the end of Sports Talk 1240. John, thank you for joining me in studio tonight. Glad to have you. We'll have to do
thank
this
you so much, Andy, of course.
All right, for my man Brian back there, have a good rest of the night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.